time for the second message of the morning. I will just mention right now that you, thanks to you all who were praying and are praying for this, first time I've ever sat down, so to speak, for 15 minutes and stood up and preached another sermon, and a little bit of apprehension about all that, but I guess you're the guinea pig, so to speak, and might have to suffer for it, but continue to pray as we move through this today. Handed out this survey, and the name is optional. The point of this survey is really just to see where we are with our music, and so that's why maybe you probably don't want to write your name, but write male or female, parent, yes or no. Just simply circle whatever applies to you, married, single, head of home, yes or no, and then your age group. Now, this is for youth and adults, anyone, and simply go down through and never, seldom, or regularly where you get your music and the type of music you listen to and a few other things just for interest's sake. At the bottom, are there any instruments you play personally, yes or no? If you want to put them in, you may. Have you ever personally written or played a psalm? I think I already have my answer on that, but are you happy with your music selection? And I could have put a line at the bottom for anything else you want to write about music. Maybe I should have put, and I actually had it on, then I took it off. Are you happy with our current standard on music? We are going through a decrease currently and trying to find out where people are and where we should be on different issues. So if you're here and if you're listening, I am requesting you to fill this out, and we'll actually have them pick it up at the end of the message. Fill it out, fold it if you'd like, and hand it to maybe the center aisles, and maybe the ones who handed them out could pick them up at the end of the service, at the end of the message. So, and if you enjoy surveys, recently I preached a sermon on culture, Christianity, and my convictions, and I did another survey, and that's kind of what kind of inspired me to do this survey here this morning. That will be available. I'll put it in the back on the chair, and you can take one. Only take one if you're going to fill one of these out, because I don't have as many on convictions. But as we're looking at convictions as a conference, it is interesting to see where people are on their convictions, and I certainly would be glad to have these back. And if you don't get them back today, just simply hand them in to your pastor. The pastors that are represented here, turn them in to your pastor, and I would like, yeah, at least to get a little bit of feedback. Of the ones I handed out at Shirksville, I think I handed out around 80 and only got 30 back, so we'd be glad for more input on that, even though you don't have the opportunity to necessarily hear that sermon and the convictions that I believe that we should be developing. But anyway, that's a little side note. A free survey if you'd like to participate in another one. Down to business. Music in creation. Psalm 19. We went there already, but we'll just go back there. Turn with me to Psalm 19. There's a lot of different places that we can go. Like we talked about, 4% of the Bible is music. But I believe here in particular it talks about creation. Psalm 19, verses 1 through 4. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun. We mentioned this earlier that the word line actually means a rope or a musical string that creates the sound that goes forth in all the earth that the Apostle Paul referenced in Romans 10:18. The sound of God's music is going around the world through creation. God created a musical universe. God created music in the universe. What is the music in the universe? We're going to start looking at the music in creation and then look at how music's influence in creation. When we talked about this, Brother Tim and Brother Brendan the other week thought maybe the title should be Music in Creation and Beyond, which gives me the privilege to ramble a bit and go down trails, bunny trails, so to speak. God created music in the universe. Where is the music? I'm going to do a little bit of reading here. Hopefully it won't be too monotonous. But after God created the angels, he created the material universe. And music was built into this physical realm. The Hebrews, in the Old Testament, the Hebrews, they've long understood the idea of the harmony of the spheres, talking in particularly the harmony in the planets. Harmony refers to the planets actually being related to each other in musical pitches, philosophically in the sense that their distances hold the same ratios as between pleasing musical intervals, and literally in the sense that the planets resound in actual tones. I did want to just say at the beginning of this that I'll be sharing this more or less as a result of what some have done by way of scientific research. It's not necessarily Bible in the fact that all the little details, but it is Bible in the fact of what we just read, that there is music and it's sounding forth around the world and even throughout the universe. The people in Bible times understood that the planets were spaced out on a musical ratio, and the same as our musical scale. Not only that, as scientists have studied, they say that the Earth vibrates at 7.83 hertz, and technically this is the musical note of C sharp. A study has been done that it was completed, and they used the circumference of the planets. They took the moon, and by calculating the circumference, they calculated the frequency of each of the planets. And they have agreed that the planets in our solar system are in harmony with each other. If we calculate the musical notes of the planets, we understand that the Earth is C sharp, Pluto is D sharp, Mercury is E, Jupiter is F, F sharp, Saturn is G, the Moon is A, and Mars is A sharp, I believe, and the Sun is B. And so if the solar system is in harmony, I could ask, did anyone know this before? And yes, many cultures knew that. In fact, they built their temples based on this knowledge, and I'm not sure even how that affected the way they built their temples, but they believed it, and that's what they accredited, that the moon and the stars and the planets, that they have frequencies and that they're vibrating and emitting noise, you could say. The ancient Hebrews were well aware of this astronomical reality and undoubtedly applied it to their understanding of music theory. Man did not start with a 1, 3, or 5 note scale and decide that 7 tones worked better together mathematically. They understand that God gave his people understanding in science and astronomy and the use of stringed instruments and a 7-tone scale with the relationship that parallels to the solar system. The Egyptians found that F sharp is the basic harmonic that can bridge together all notes. And within the king's chamber of their pyramid, they designed it to elevate their dead or living initiates. They designed the whole thing that so they could elevate their dead or living initiates into the spirit world, and they would musically play or sing or hum the tune of F sharp. NASA acoustics expert Tom Danley took sound measurements within the Great Pyramid, also known as the Cheops Pyramid, using amplifiers and speakers, and in the so-called reliving chambers above the King's Chamber, and after measuring the frequency, generated 16 hertz, which is below the range of human hearing, but he found that within that pyramid, it corresponded to the F-sharp chord. F sharp is regarded with respect by the ancient Chinese as hu, which they believed was the tone of the earth. Native American flute makers still tune their instruments to this note to serenade Mother Earth. The notes that form the F sharp chord, F sharp, C, and A, accord to the ancient Egyptian texts and are the harmonic of our planet. Other F sharp references, being that F sharp is the bridge that can connect all of the other harmonics, the speed of light is F sharp. God used light to resonate throughout the universe. Now modern science is supporting what the Hebrews believed, that sound can occur anywhere pressure waves can travel, meaning that sound waves can echo through the atmosphere of the planets and even the gases surrounding an enlarging black hole. The universe contains the equivalent of rhythmic pulses like a percussion section as well as low drones like a bass section. Science has also discovered that heavenly music is bellowed out by the sun's atmosphere. It's published in space.com, April 18 of 2007. These frequencies at a thousandth of a hertz are too low for human ears to hear. We can hear between 20 and 20,000 hertz. The sun's corona carrying magnetic sound waves similar to those of musical instruments. Explosive events at the sun's surface appear to trigger acoustic waves that bounce back and forth between the end of the loops, a phenomenon known as a standing wave. The space.com article stated that standing waves are exactly the same waves you see on a guitar string. Deeper study of the heavens indicate that those sounds are working together much like a musical composition. And so we have the planets in their orbit making a musical sound. Now who can hear these sounds? I can't hear them. You can't hear them, I doubt. Who can hear them? Well, we know that God is looking on his creation, and obviously he sees and knows everything. And I just had to imagine that the universe, the stars and beyond, are kind of like an orchestra playing to God. And even the sounds on the earth around us, I believe, can be that. Just as a side note, when you look in the sky and you see that when there, excuse me, when there is a lunar eclipse, let's see, get this right, when there's a solar eclipse and the moon covers the sun, how does that work? Is the sun the same size as the moon? What matches up? Well, just a little science here. The moon has a diameter of 2,160 miles and a distance from us of 21,600 miles, a ratio of 1 to 100. It appears the same size in the sky as the sun because the sun's diameter to distance ratio is also 1 to 100. The sun has a diameter of 903,000 miles while being 930,000 miles from us. This equality of ratios is seen visually when the moon passes in front of the sun in an eclipse. Just something that's interesting. They used those diameters to figure out the tones. But anyway, that's all just interesting by way of nature. That's music in the universe. Music closer home. Music in nature around us. The Bible indicates that God created sound waves to emanate from all creation in an organized fashion to make a certain music, perceptible in small ways to us and a lot more to him. Did you hear the music of the earth this morning? Turn with me to 1 Chronicles 16. I think we can quickly turn to a few of these references. Well, the Bible references the various creatures that create music and the glory that God gets from it. 1 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 33. Then shall the trees of the wood sing out at the presence of the Lord because he cometh to judge the earth. Well, we're not here today, but it says here that the trees can sing and will sing. Isaiah 43, verse 23. I'll just read a few of these. Sing, O ye heavens, shout, ye lower parts of the earth. Break forth into singing, ye mountains, O forest, and every tree therein. And so it talks about mountains, forests, trees, and the lower parts of the earth shouting and singing. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear the trees sing yet. Isaiah 55, 12 talks about the mountains and hills breaking forth into singing and the trees of the field clapping their hands. I didn't hear that either. But there's obvious other natural music that happens. How many of you heard the birds singing? Hear birds singing? It's beautiful. Song of Solomon talks about that. When the time of the singing of birds is come and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land. Do you hear the voice of the turtle? How many of you heard the voice of a turtle? Actually, if you look at the translation, the question is why they translated it turtle. And if you look back to the Hebrew, it says that it wasn't the turtle. It should have been turtle dove. Other Bible scholars argue that actually what he's talking about is the tree frogs. So whether it's tree frogs or turtle doves, have you heard turtle doves? Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful cooing of the doves. And the frogs and the cicadas, and the list goes on and on. This time of year, it can become almost deafening to hear the cicadas. There's also the crickets, there's bees, and just a lot of different parts of creation that are singing to God. Why are they singing? I believe they're singing because God has put a song in their heart. You know, what if we would, and you can just do this for contrast, just doing this for contrast, if I would have been an evolutionist this morning and stood up and tried to explain where does music come from? Where would we start? Started with some guttural grunts, and eventually some sort of language was worked out, and eventually music. And you know, we believe that God created the world with knowledge and with things development, maturity is the word, all of those things in place. And it's a total different viewpoint. We believe that things came along developed than that they had to start with something very basic. And based on that, we have a total different viewpoint of music. How many of you have experienced an IMAX? Experienced IMAX? Did you enjoy that the first time? I remember taking children and they were just absolutely terrified. What made it so enjoyable or terrified? The sound, right? It was two things. It was the visuals, the amazing surrounding visuals, and the amazing sound. I did a little bit of research into that, and I don't think I'll share any of that this morning, but there are impressive visuals and sound of an IMAX. And I believe that God intends for us to have somewhat of a, I'm not going to say IMAX experience, because IMAX is, you could say, over the top. But as we live in his earth, that we would look at what he created and that we would take it in and enjoy it, and realizing that his glory is on display and we should be reveling in his glory. Immerse yourself in the music of God's creation. One of the things that's really impressive is to walk up to a waterfall, and the sound, the roar, is deafening. And just to realize the power that's there, just a little tiny demonstration of God's power in nature. I'd like to move on now to the second part of the message. I'd like, based on our discussion so far, what types of music do we hear in nature, and what sounds do we not hear? Where can I take you to hear the rock beat? Where do you go to hear that? Obviously, there's nowhere that God created it that way. There are places places where the sounds are beautiful, and there's places where the sounds are terrible. But we know that as we go up to nature, that nature has a calming and inspiring effect on our spirit, and that's the power of God through that. There's also places we could go where the sound and the terror would be exactly the opposite, and it's the work of man. God, why doesn't God play rock music in nature? Here's a little article from the Virginia Pilot, which is a publication of Virginia Tech, and this was written in 1997. The headline is Mozart or Rock? I'll just read it here. Your mom was right. Rock and roll really does rot the brain. That's according to David Merrill, a 16-year-old Nansemond River High School student whose high school science experiment supports what parents have been saying for years. Hard rock taints the brain, well, at least the brains of mice. Using 72 male laboratory mice, a stopwatch, and a 5-foot by 3-foot maze, and the music of Mozart and Anthrax. Anthrax is a rock band that was randomly recommended to the boy when he went to Walmart. He said, what's the worst rock band out there? They said, here, try Anthrax. And he said, after listening to it for 10 seconds, he agreed. It's hopefully the worst out there, but hopefully there's not a lot worse. But he decided to work to establish the effects of rock versus Mozart music in mice, something as simple as mice. To prove his point, he assembled 3 separate groups of 24 mice, a control group, a hard rock group, and a classical group. To ensure scientific validity, and he did this several times, and also other places did it as well, but to ensure the validity, he got white mice weighing between 15 and 20 grams that were 4 to 6 weeks old and were bred to ensure that there were no genetic abnormalities. The mice spent the first week getting used to their controlled environment in David's parents' basement. They received measured feedings and 12 hours of light each day. Each mouse navigated the maze to establish the base time of about 10 minutes. So he made this maze, and they went through the maze, and each mouse that got through in about 10 minutes was average. So then he started playing music to these mice. And the control group continued to navigate without music. And as they did this day after day after day, 3 times a week for 3 weeks. So they went through a total of 9 times. They were able to take the 10 minutes down to 5 minutes. That's the control group, because they did it time after time after time. They went from 10 minutes down to 5 minutes. Now, the mice that navigated the maze with Mozart knocked off 8.5 minutes. So they went from 10 minutes down to 1.5 minutes. Play mice good music, they really do well. But the group that was listening to hard rock, what happened to that group? Well, they bumped through the maze. They were dazed, they were confused, and they took an average of, the baseline is 10 minutes, which the good group playing Mozart got down to 1.5 minutes. Rock music, what happened? It took them 30 minutes, tripling the amount of time it previously took to complete the maze. Most notably, the hard rock mice didn't sniff the air to find the trails of other mice that came before them. It was like music dulled their senses, David said. It shows point blank that hard rock has a negative effect all around. I can't think of a positive effect that hard rock has on learning. In fact, David thinks that the negative effects go well beyond learning. During the 4-month experiment that David housed each mouse in separate aquariums, it's because last year, when he did his first experiment, he kept all the hard rock mice together. And as he had each of these groups together, he couldn't finish his experiment. You know why? Because all the hard rock mice ate each other. They killed each other. They got violent. The effects of music on the brain. That was simply a physical, the mice, they didn't know what they were being subjected to. They weren't cognitive. They couldn't decide anything. They were simply guinea pigs. They were mice. None of the other mice did that. None of the other mice killed each other. The effects of musical mice, and I don't have it written down, but some of my other notes, I think they actually dissected the brains and realized that it was actually creating lesions on the brains, and there was things going on there that was ruining their brains. And so we think about music and our minds and our choices. Music affects a mouse in his brain. What about you? Does music affect you? I did not bring any sound clips here today, and I would have enjoyed doing that, just playing music, but of course the setting. But to simply play music, what does music do to your mind? I could play a few clips of music that would totally alter the state of your mind, from marching music to where you would feel like just getting up and doing something. On the way here, my wife had turned on some very soothing, soft music, and one of the boys said, "Are they all sleeping back there?" And I said, "Well, yeah. Listen to the music that they're listening to. It just puts them in a calm and passive mood, and of course, that's what we want. The way to church on Sunday morning, that's the way they should be, just relax and taking it easy." I could play you eerie sounds that would put you into suspense. I could play you something slow and restful that might even put you to sleep more than the preacher. I could play you some dance music that would make you feel like getting up and dancing. But the brain specialists tell us that music triggers a flood of human emotions and images that have the ability to instantaneously produce very powerful changes in your emotional state. And he says that after 25 years of working with the brain, he still doesn't know any other way to change, quote, who people are, you could say, more than the power of music. And music artists have experimented with the power of music. They have decided to play with the rhythm, and they've actually started riots just by the music that they were playing to them, and many other terrible things where people threw off their clothes and participated in gross immorality because of the music that they were listening to. Department stores know that there's a power of music, and they play music to get you to spend more money. I won't go into all that I have down there, but music affects us emotionally, physically, mentally, and of course, spiritually as well. What are the looking at the effects of particularly the rock music beat on the brain? When you have a heavy driving beat, what does that do? I understand that there was this man named Phineas Gage, and this was back in 1848. He was working on the railroad. Of course, the railroads went all the way through Pennsylvania, and he was in Vermont, and they were blasting rock, and his job was to bring along the tamping iron, and the people ahead of him would bore the hole and throw the charge in, and then they would put sand on top and hit, or clay, and that would deaden between the iron, and when he pounded it in, the pounding of the iron and between the charge. And when he came to this next charge, he was looking back over his shoulder, talking to a friend, and as he slammed this tamping rod down, it was, I believe it was 1¼ inches in diameter and 3 feet 7 inches long. So 3 foot 7 inches, somewhere about that long, 1¼ inches in diameter. And he's slamming that thing down, and they had forgotten to put that cushion. And so as that hit the rock, hit the explosive, a spark, whatever it was, all of that coming together, it set off the blast. And he had his mouth open as he was kind of looking back as it went down, and the charge blasted the rod up through his open mouth, up through his brain, and out the top. And the rod landed, I'm not following very well with my notes, it landed some 80 feet away, smeared with blood and brain. And amazingly enough, Phineas Gage survived. So they loaded him on a cart, hauled him back to town, and did the reconstruction best they could. But it took out the part of the brain that's called the prefrontal cortex. And what became interesting about Phineas Gage, not really interesting, he left his wife, he got involved in all kind of immorality, when previously he was a moral man that had a sense of morality and talked decent, and after that he was profane and ungodly. And scientists, what really went on? Of course he had a brain injury, and that was an issue in itself, but also what they learned as they studied this situation is the place of the prefrontal cortex within our brain and how that allows us to make cognitive choices. I'm going to move left, I'm going to move right, I'm going to do this or I'm not going to do this, this is right, this is wrong. And when you lose that, he lost his morality, they felt like, because he lost that part of his brain. And also then as they study music, scientists have studied music and what music does to the brain. And see if I can get back to the right page of the notes here. Prefrontal cortex is where we think. Character is developed by use of that front part of your brain. Reason and logic, problem solving. And evidently, when you listen to music that's too high-powered and if it's over 3 or 4 beats per second, it puts that part of the brain to sleep, so to speak. And it does 2 different things. It stresses it, and as it stresses your brain releases opioids, and that has a whole effect. We're not going to go into that, the whole scientific effect of releasing hormones, messing up your hormone equilibrium. But not only that, it puts your brain into alpha mode, and that instead of in the beta mode, beta is where you're analyzing and thinking. As you hear, you analyze and you do, and the brain is alert. It moves you from that to an alpha where the brain is relaxing, and it's not really thinking about what's being brought into your mind. And so when the frontal lobe is bypassed, our minds, our thinking is affected and it's damaged. When Michael Jackson was asked about his sexual dance moves, he said, "It's the music that compels me to do it, and I don't even think about it. It just happens. I'm a slave to the rhythm." What was going on? Well, he wasn't even thinking because he was under the influence of music. Well, I think it's time here to close. Music. God's desire for music is order, excellence, creativity, where it all comes together and it is truly beautiful. And the purpose is to be for his honor and his glory. What is our music? Well, thankfully, I don't have to go as deeply into the morality more than I already did. Hopefully, I believe Brendan still has plenty to cover, a lot of places that we could have gone. Hopefully this was a blessing. I think the clock says it's time to close, and so at this point, maybe we'll just kneel for prayer.